From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection this hour was made in Somalia when a young boy left his country with his mother, his sister, and his brothers. They headed to Uganda, where their new home for the next 10 years would be a refugee camp. This week, many of us think about the blessings in our lives and the challenges we face. This hour, we're exploring the challenges faced by refugees who have come to the United States. We remain a country that is largely split on whether we should be accepting more or fewer refugees. Some states, like New York, admit relatively high numbers. States like Delaware and Hawaii, for example, accepted zero refugees in the past year. The Jewish Federation of Greater Rochester is getting ready to host an event to collect needed items for local refugees and families. You're going to meet some of them this hour. And as for the young boy I mentioned at the outset, he's here today. Abdullahi Muhammad eventually made his way to the United States. He thought his father was deceased and learned after coming to the United States that that is not true. He is a kind of refugee success story, and we're going to hear more from him and our guests this hour. So let me go ahead and welcome them now. Abdullahi Muhammad, a refugee from Somalia, is here. And welcome. Thank you for being here.
Thank you.
Also here is Parwez Askarzada, who's a refugee from Afghanistan. Parwez, welcome to you.
Thank you, sir.
Kar Nahr is a refugee from Burma and Thailand. Kar, welcome to you.
Thank you, sir.
And Karen Elam is Community Relations Director for the Jewish Federation of Greater Rochester. Karen, welcome to you as well.
Thank you.
This is a subject that will spark some heated feelings, passionate feelings on all sides. We understand that. It can be a political issue or set of ideas, but for the Jewish Federation of Greater Rochester, I know, Karen, this is not a political issue. This is a humanity issue, isn't it?
Correct.
Yeah,
that's right.
And it's an organization that is apolitical.
Yes.
So why don't you tell us what's coming up? I think it's two Sundays from now, right? December 3rd, the event is Supporting Our Refugee Neighbors, a Rochester Community Response. What's coming up?
Correct. So that is an event that we've organized for that Sunday, as you say, December 3rd from 1 to 4 p.m. We are using the occasion, it's happening at Temple Brith Kodesh in Brighton, and we're using the occasion to collect clothing, toiletries, household goods, appliances for refugees in our community. But we also want to emphasize that it's an opportunity for community members to meet representatives of 8 local refugee agencies to learn about their work, the people they serve, and volunteer opportunities that they may have. So we really want to see this as not just a one-off, but an opportunity to connect our community to the groups that are doing work with refugees locally.
And they have a list of items they need, new or gently used, for our refugee neighbors. For example, men and women, you're looking for men's suits, sweaters, coats, winter boots, hats, scarves, and gloves. You've got needs for boys and girls, right?
Correct. And it's funny, if people have seen our flyer, I've been asked a lot, why do we specifically have green t-shirts under boys and girls? And the reason is that we are collecting for the Rochester International Academy, which is a school in Rochester that serves almost 400 refugee students, and their uniform is green t-shirts and khaki pants. So the list is quite specific. We worked very closely with these 8 agencies and asked them what they were looking for us to collect for them so that we didn't sort of create a situation where we were giving them things that weren't useful or weren't needed. So people have asked about things that are not on there, and I've said, correct, what is there is exactly what those 8 agencies need. And if I have a chance, I would love to tell who the agencies are.
Please do.
Terrific. So Mary's Place, Saints Place, Refugees Helping Refugees, Rochester Refugee Resettlement Services, No One Left Behind, Muslim Volunteer Network, the Rochester International Academy, and Catholic Family Center. They will all have tables at the event. So for people that come and donate, please make sure that you stay and talk with the agencies and learn more about the work that they're doing.
Very good. And I want to just paint a little picture for what the current situation is when it comes to refugee admission. This is from the Pew Research Center. The United States admitted just about 85,000 refugees in the fiscal year ending in September of 2016. That was the most in any year during the Obama administration. So just about 85,000 refugees. And an additional 31,000 have been admitted to the United States from October of last year through January 24th, essentially the beginning of the Trump administration. And refugee admissions would drastically drop under President Trump's proposals, but that's going to take some time. So the U.S. is on pace to reach the Obama administration's goal of admitting 110,000 refugees in fiscal year 2017. That would be the highest number in this country since 1994. So we are at a peak for roughly the last generation, but that's probably going to change under this administration. Now, in fiscal year 2016, the highest number of refugees from any nation came from the Democratic Republic of Congo. That accounted for 16,000 refugees out of the 85,000, followed by Syria, 12,500, Burma, 12,300, Iraq, nearly 10,000, and Somalia, just over 9,000. Nearly 39,000 Muslim refugees entered the United States in that last fiscal year, just about half, 46% of refugee admissions. And it's very different state to state. California, Texas, and New York resettled nearly a quarter of all refugees coming to our country in the last fiscal year, taking in about 20,700. But some other states did very little in the way of this. So, for example, Arkansas, Wyoming, they each resettled fewer than 10 refugees. Delaware and Hawaii took in zero. So there's a big disparity there. And Karen, how do you feel about not only New York State, but the Rochester community when it comes to refugee resettlement?
Well, I have to tell you that I am a recent transplant to Rochester. We've lived here. My family and I moved up about 4 years ago from New York City. And I personally have been blown away by the compassion and the care that this community shows refugees. It is a resettlement community, so there are communities across the United States that specifically have contracts with the federal government to resettle refugees. And that particular organization doing that here is Catholic Family Center. So every refugee coming to this city goes through Catholic Family Center in terms of the paperwork that's done, et cetera. But once they're here, Catholic Family Center supports them. And then when that period of time is done, because there's a limit on how much funding Catholic Family Center has to be able to resettle refugees, all of these other agencies come in and pick up from where Catholic Family Center leaves off. And it is really a remarkable effort and community. And I can't speak to the experience like our three other panelists can. And I look forward to hearing them talk a little bit about that. But I personally can tell you what I've learned this year is that these agencies that I named and many others that exist in the community are doing an incredible job with refugees here.
And so in a moment, you're going to hear these stories from our guests. Heidi writes to the program and says, please, please let me know how I can volunteer. I have wanted to help out refugees in some way for a very long time. I don't know. I mean, you've got the event coming up where you're trying to raise items. What about volunteering?
So I love that question. And Heidi, what I would say is, please, if you can come to the event, come and you will meet with agency representatives and they can let you know specifically what they're looking for. If for any reason you can't make it on that day, then just follow up with me. You can reach me at the Jewish Federation and I can leave my contact information here at WXXI and we will connect you in with those agencies.
Okay. And the event, by the way, Heidi, one more time, it's Supporting Our Refugee Neighbors Sunday, December 3rd, two Sundays from now, from 1 to 4 p.m. at Temple Brith Kodesh. That's on Elmwood Avenue in Brighton. That's an event to raise items for refugee neighbors, but that's a great opportunity for you to interface directly with people from those agencies.
Exactly.
So thank you for that email, Heidi. I'm going to start with Abdullahi Muhammad, who I briefly touched on your story, Abdullahi, at the outset of the hour, but why don't we go back here? So I think you were 10 years old when you left Somalia, is that right?
Yeah, like that.
And what was childhood like for you in your recollection in those first 10 years of your life?
Actually, that 10 years was a very hard, you know, life with the families. And we had to move, you know, from the civil, you know, war from the country, then come to Uganda, refugee camp.
And you're only 10 years old, but, you know, when we talked about war in that country, Was there a daily life, was there a rhythm of life that you got used to, or was it always unstable in your childhood?
And actually, you know, I was, you know, in Mogadishu that time area, mm-hmm. and still the civil war was increasing, you know, increasing. So, and it was very hard, you know, when you go to outside and the family send you like something like, you know, from the market. So, and you come back and you don't see your friends, you know, like they did. So, and it's very, you know, I don't want to just go back. Yeah,
I understand.
It's very hard life, yeah.
And you were about 10 years old when you and your mother, your sister, and your brothers went to a refugee camp in Uganda. You thought your father was deceased, is that correct?
And actually, yes, because I couldn't find, we tried to find him from, you know, the Red Cross. And so, and his neighbors told me, and he's, you know, deceased.
What was life like in that refugee camp?
And actually, life is a camp. So you can, you know, and get a job. You can go to the city. If you want to go to the city, you have to get permission, like certain days, to come back to the camp. And the schools also. And, you know, so it's like you're in the camp. So you have to follow the rules of the camp. But it was not good, you know, life, you know, for the kids and family to live in.
10 years you were there?
And actually, is I think, and I don't, you know, and you know, write it down, but it's more than, you know, 10 years.
Okay. And did you have, when you were in that camp in Uganda, did you think about your future? Did you have dreams of going anywhere else? Did you think that that would happen? What were you thinking about?
And yeah, actually, and I had, you know, dreams. And dreams became, you know, through one of, you know, the dreams I had it. So the dream was just, you know, go to camp and the process to come to United States of America, which is, you know, an equal opportunity and get a better life and better education for my sisters and brother and, you know, my family.
Do you remember what it was like to find out that you were going to be leaving that camp?
Actually, there is United Nations over there. There is United Nations, and there is a WFP food program. And so you just stay with the hope. Stay there, hope, until, you know, they bring you a list, the family's list, for doing the process to come to United States.
And what was it like coming here? I mean, was the United States what you envisioned in your mind it would be like?
Yeah, because and what we know is United States is the, you know, and the country, big country, and around the world, and it helps the refugees and also equal opportunity. So, and you know, you can get a job, you can get a school, you can, you know, get a better life and peace. That was only the majority refugees in their mind to come to U.S. and get a better life and education.
What was it like coming to Rochester?
Rochester is a part of America, so and I like it because when we came to the Rochester, we didn't go to the camp. We just enjoyed the community, you know, work team together, play soccer together. So I like it, I like it.
It's not too cold.
And actually, you know, the weather, you know, so you like the country, so you got to like the weather, too.
That is not true. You do not have to like the weather.
So you choose the weather or the camp.
Sure, I know. I take the point. I take the point. What was the most difficult part of the transition of coming here for you, Abdullahi?
Can you say it again, please?
What was the most difficult part of adjusting to life here?
In here?
You? Yeah.
And actually, and the language, like English, and like, you know, the cultural, you know, like, you know, and the system, you know, you came into the new country is a new system. So, and the culture also. So the first thing you try to get, you know, and your community together. And the thing hardest was you also mentioned it before. You said the weather, you know. So I had a job the first time I got here, and after a year we got the green and like work permit, and like green card. So that way you can, you know, get, you know, better job. So the weather, you know, they're like the snowing, you know. So I couldn't, you know, drive for the snowing, you know. So
how do you do with that now?
Now I help the people with snowy right now.
See,
yeah, they call me Abdullah. I'm stuck with snow, so you know, just go help them. You know?
See, there's that's one thing. I bet you never thought you would be doing that.
Exactly.
How is your family, and what's the story about your father? Can you share that story?
Actually, I can just, you know, I want to talk about, you know, half of it, if you don't mind. So I don't want to make it flashback.
Okay.
So it's, you know, and I don't want that to affect, you know, my memory. So I just but I want to share this story to the, my community. And yeah, so once I figure out, and this is, you know, a hard story because who found my dad was my wife, you know. So me and my wife, we get here together to U.S. register, and she has some, you know, sister family in Somalia. So she was talking to her sister, and especially, and we are, you know, sheriff. We call sheriff. So we have a tribe called sheriff. So I'm from that, you know, tribe. So then the most of the people respect, give more respect. So and my wife's sister said, you know, and I want to see, you know, and a gentleman here called sheriff. To you know, to just pray for me, you know, just to read some, you know, Holy Quran for me. Then my wife told me, she said, okay, my sister, I talked to my sister, then there is Sharif, you know. Then she said the name. So, and then I said, okay, just, you know, maybe people same name, you know, so they people look like same. So then I tried to talk to him. Then he asked me, he tried to pray for us too. So, and I asked him, okay, so, how's your kids? How's your, you know? He said, no, I don't have, you know, kids. I'm alone here. But I wish you guys for the, you know, better life. So I told him, pray for us and pray for all the world, you know, everybody. So, and he told me, he asked my name. So when I told him my name, then that time he said, okay. He just write down the phone number, all information. Then he said, okay. So he's going to contact you. That time he knew. So, you know, I'm his son.
Wow.
So, yeah. Then I talked to my mom, everybody, so they talk each other. So that's how, you know, then my wife was the person who, you know, who found him.
Wow.
But yeah, it's a long story.
But it's an amazing story.
Yeah.
It is an amazing story. And Abdullahi Muhammad has been in the United States for how long now? When did you first come here?
It's almost 9.5 now.
9.5 years.
Yes,
now.
Yeah.
And tell everyone how you're doing now, how your family is doing here, and what work you are doing here.
And yeah, thanks for asking. And the side of the job I'm doing, and like a teamwork. It's not even, you know, it's not a job. It's a family, you know, family job. Mary's Place, outreach.
Mary's Place. Yeah,
yeah, I'm working there, security and donation coordinator. But you know, family. We are family over there. You know, I'm not, you know, employee. So, and we do here, and I do as a soccer coach. I volunteer soccer coach, adults and kids. So I volunteer because I live here and my son born here. So I have to do the job I will do in my country. So I have to feel, you know, this is my country. So, and my son born here. So we all here, except my dad. So we just do the city cleaning, you know, the picnic, soccer, yeah, we, the active, you know, and positive community.
Gary writes to the program and says, Evan, thank you for doing the show. Humanizing the plight of these fellow human beings is so important. So what am I thankful for today? I am thankful to live in a city that welcomes refugees. That comes from Gary. Did you feel welcome when you first came here, and have you felt welcome ever since, Abdullahi?
Yes, absolutely, I feel.
And what do you tell refugees who are coming to Rochester? I mean, anyone who is in this situation, I cannot relate to it. I've never been through anything like that. You know, I'm sure there is occasionally fear or excitement, but also concern about, you know, understanding different cultures. How do you work with them? What do you tell them about Rochester as a community?
And before people in out of the United States?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so in future, yeah, this is not now, so I think it's in future. So I will tell them just choose Rochester, New York, just to choose the process, because they ask where you want to go, which, you know, state you want to go. sometimes they ask, sometimes they don't ask, they just choose for you. It depends the agency who's gonna take care of you, you know, to resell to that state. So I will advise them to choose Rochester, because Rochester is, you know, and you know, good state, and we have good opportunities here. We have jobs, we have schools, and we have agencies that are ready and honest to help the refugees until they succeed their goal. So, and the kids, when they learn to give back to the registered community.
Abdullahi Mohammed is one of our panelists as we're talking about challenges and success stories of refugees in the Rochester community. We have a vibrant refugee community, but certainly there are needs, and there's an event coming up Sunday, December 3rd. That's two Sundays from now. The event is called Supporting Our Refugee Neighbors, a Rochester Community Response, sponsored by the Jewish Federation of Greater Rochester, from 1 to 4 p.m. on Sunday, December 3rd. It's at Temple Brith Kodesh, and they are collecting new or gently used items, everything from men and women's clothing, boys and girls' clothing, toiletries, household goods, small appliances even. So they've got a list, and is there, Karen Elam, is there a list somewhere people can find it online, perhaps?
Yes, at our website, which is jewishrochester.org.
JewishRochester.org. Click on events, and then you can see that list. So if you want to show up that day and bring some items there, that's great. We had an email from a listener earlier who was asking about volunteering to help in the refugee community, and that's a great day to meet people from different agencies, because a number of different agencies will be there that day. And if you want to ask about what you can do, you can get some good answers that day as well. So that's all coming up. Let's get our only break of the hour, and when we come back from our only break of the hour, we are going to hear some more stories from people living right here in our community, refugees who have come here. We'll continue with Abdullahi Mohammed, Karen Elam from the Jewish Federation of Greater Rochester. And when we come back, you'll meet Parwez Askarzada, a refugee from Afghanistan, and Kar Nar, who's a refugee from Burma and Thailand. That's all coming up next on Connections. I'm Evan Dawson from all of us at the Connections staff here at WXXI. Happy Thanksgiving. Enjoy the next couple of days. We've got the Splendid Tables Turkey Confidential coming your way Thursday, and the Best of the Best, the 2017 Third Coast Festival broadcast on Friday. And then Connections is back with you on Monday with a conversation on the first state in the country to offer gender non-binary options on driver's licenses. That's California. Talk to you Monday. Welcome back to Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. I really appreciate Gary's email to the program mentioning feeling thankful for having this vibrant community welcoming refugees in the Rochester area. Because as I mentioned earlier this hour, Pew Research shows cities and states vary widely when it comes to how many refugees they work with and help to resettle and help improve their lives. So Rochester has a vibrant refugee community, and this program is not about the host sharing his views, but I will say that I endorse Gary's view. I am thankful that we have refugees like the ones right here in the studio, right here in Rochester. I think it makes for a beautiful and vibrant community, and I'm really happy to hear these success stories. But they need some of your help. That's why we're talking about the event coming up, and we're hearing some personal stories. And Parwez Askarzada is a refugee from Afghanistan. You might have heard about the organization No One Left Behind. Parwez was helped by them. He was a medical interpreter for the U.S. Army Coalition Forces in Afghanistan. And Parwez has been here only since August, is that right?
10th August.
So 10th of August, just over 3 months you have been here.
Yes.
How is life in the United States, Parwez?
It's cooler these days.
Yes. You haven't seen anything yet.
It's getting cool these days. It was warm when I got here, so it was a long flight. Like flight from Afghanistan to Dubai, Dubai to Germany, and Germany to here, DC, Dallas airport, and Dallas to Rochester. And when I got here, the first breeze that hit my face, it was good. It felt really good. Yes, so far it's so good.
Well, we'll get back to what's going on with you now in a moment, but let me back up a little bit here. Why don't you tell me about the life that you left in Afghanistan? I think read that you're 26 years old and grew up your whole life in Afghanistan, yes?
I grew up my whole life in Afghanistan. I lived there. I had my schooling there. I'm a high school graduated, and I had worked 2 years for U.S. Coalition Forces in Afghanistan, in my home city.
I think, Parwez, many Americans don't have a very good understanding, me included, of what life is like in Afghanistan, in a country like yours that you left. What do you remember about childhood? Did it feel relatively stable? You went to school, you know, or did it not? What was life like for you?
So, like, from past 40 years, it's all war misery in Afghanistan. It's all war. And these days, it's suicide bombing that's hurting people, immense population. And people are in mosque praying, and suddenly there is a suicide bombing and there is a suicide attack inside a mosque and people are being dead. So we have faced a lot of extreme groups of terrorism through the years. And at the past, it was like brutal attacks of extreme groups in the large cities, small cities, even districts, even villages. And right now it's suicide bombing that's hurting people in the big cities. A lot of our young generation, I see through media and social media, young generation who has high education even in Afghanistan and outside Afghanistan, and they're caught in a suicide attack and they're dead. So their hopes and their all their mission and all their plannings are ruined by some extreme groups or that doesn't have an idea what they're doing. So yes, these things, that terrorism and stuff, really, really affected Afghans through the years.
And you did work for the U.S. Army Coalition Forces in Afghanistan. What was the work that you did?
We were helping, our team was helping a hospital, ANA, Afghan National Army Hospital. So it was a 200-bed hospital. We had an advisory team, or a team of mentors, Americans, Navy forces, Air forces, Army forces. Those were medic team. So we helped a medical hospital, and we helped to enforce and to develop the medical skills in that hospital, like to an international level.
Was it difficult work?
It was difficult because sometimes we received calls and we went to the hospital and we see people wounded, fired, like hands were cut down and legs were cut down. We had to deal with that kind of situation, and that was very hurting. And that was a pain at that time, that you see some people helping and it's really not helping the cause. There are a big amount of forces that are helping and it's really not helping the cause. There are still people being wounded and affected, harmed.
Do you have hope that one day you will be able to return to Afghanistan and it will be a peaceful country and you will be able to visit and travel freely and feel safe?
I hear that a lot of our like knowledgeable people who have a big knowledge of politics and big knowledge of security, they say that there won't be any peace in Afghanistan for like 60 years, like 40 years. And this is like this is very demoralizing for us. I hope one day I go back to Afghanistan. It's a peaceful country. And all the young generation and the coming generation are not affected, and not affected from these wars and these miseries.
We're talking to Parwez Askarzada, who is a refugee from Afghanistan. He was assisted by an organization called No One Left Behind, and he applied for a special immigrant visa, an SIV, to the United States. It took a year to be approved and another 6 months to get the visa. So it's been it was a long process, would you say?
It was a long process, and it needs a lot of documentation, a lot of paperwork. You have to translate all your local documents to English and get approved by foreign ministries. It's a long process to our Afghan system and through the U.S. embassy system. So it needs medical examination, which needs money, $500 to $600. And yeah, it has a year and a half, it could be 2 years of process.
In this country, especially under this current administration, there is a lot of talk about what the president thinks should be, quote, extreme vetting. In other words, they're concerned that refugees who come to the United States, that we don't know who they are, that we don't examine it closely, that we should be concerned that we are not checking things out more closely. What do you think about that?
We SIVs, like Afghans interpreters and who work with U.S. coalition forces, has served arm to arm with them, has been in the first line of war, has been many. I have stories that many Afghan interpreters rescued the lives of U.S. forces, like Matthew Ziller. He's the founder of No One Left Behind. His life was rescued by his interpreter. So he got an idea to create and found No One Left Behind. So it's different. It's different with a lot of people. But still, we have immigration process. We have scannings. We have security checks. So how, if a country sees itself as a very organized country and it goes through a year and a half or 2 years of immigration process. So immigration is pushing and pulling. If the challenges are pushing you, so there should be a country that pulls you over, pulls you back towards them.
Well, you're here now, and you arrived in August, and Parwez arrived on his own, alone in the United States. Abdullahi, whose story you heard earlier this hour, arrived with a wife, siblings, his mother. So very different situation. You came in August. How did you feel about, you know, did you feel alone, for lack of a better question?
So I got here in the airport. There was people welcoming me. There was a family that were really fond to keep me at their home, welcome me. They really like to be a reception for me. So I got the airport and they drove me at their home. And when they showed me my room and I opened my room, it was like a brand new room. I had towels there, I had soap, I had shampoo, I had my settled bed and everything. And they were like welcoming me like a family. So I really feel humble, and I still feel humble. And yeah.
I think that's wonderful.
That's wonderful. That's wonderful about the... I've heard different stories when I was in Afghanistan. So a lot of my co-workers finished their process and got in America. And they were saying some sad stories for me. It was demoralizing for me. Mm-hmm. But I got here and I was welcomed by a family, and I still live with them. It's 3 months and still they have the same impression towards me.
Are you doing Thanksgiving tomorrow with them?
Yes, we are doing Thanksgiving. She, Miss Connor, sent me a separate message that don't do or don't plan otherwise. You should be with us in the Thanksgiving.
So
I want to name them. It's David Mayer and Connor Mayer and their son Alex Mayer. We're like a family of four that living in a house.
That is beautiful.
Yes,
it is. And I'm glad you named them, because that's. I imagine there are more families like them who are not only helping the refugee community, but maybe listening right now and want to. So again, if you want to volunteer, if you think this might be a fit for you and you want to learn more about it, you can ask these organizations that are coming together for the event, Supporting Our Refugee Neighbors. That is Sunday, December 3rd from 1 to 4 p.m. at Temple Brith Kodesh. It's an event to raise items that families need, but it's also a chance for you if you want to ask these kind of questions. Members of these agencies will be there. And Parwez, I want to just thank you for the work that you did in Afghanistan. I mean, you
thank
worked
you
with coalition
much.
Forces, and no question, the people, Matthew Zeller and the organization that helped.
Ellen Hickory Smith.
I love that Parwez is just going to shout them all out by name. You know, look at the gratitude. It is a beautiful thing. And I wish our listeners could see the smile on Parwez's face, because you think about a life changed here. And I think about a community enriched because you're here. Are you going to stay here? What's the plan for you?
Yes, I have planned to prolong my studies in the medical field, like be a nurse, or maybe if I am qualified enough, be a nurse practitioner.
I hear you. Practice. The rumor is you got a test coming up. What's coming up?
It's coming. When I got here, so I had to do 100 hours of English classes. And after that, I would be eligible to do a CNA course. So I'm taking a CNA course test on 29 November. It's a New York State certified test.
That's next week. Oh, why are you here? Shouldn't you be studying?
Yes, I was studying in the morning.
That's okay. It's okay. It's a holiday week. Everybody can just take a little bit of a break. Good luck to you on
Thank
that.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
In the best case scenario, you work in nursing. You stay in the Rochester community?
I am.
That's great. And I'm glad it feels like home for you.
Thank you very much.
I certainly hope that continues. It's a great story. Parwez Askarzada from Afghanistan. Kar Nahr is here. And Kar is a refugee from both Burma and Thailand. And so, Kar, get right close to that microphone if you could. And why don't we go back and why don't you tell us your story? Go ahead.
Yes. My parents, they escaped from Burma. They were refugees. And I was born and grew up in refugee camp my whole life. The refugee camp are located between Burma and Thailand border. So you probably could imagine there was no safety. You never know what's going to happen. And so in the refugee camp, there was no job. My parents, they did not have job. So what I could remember when I with the place where I grew up, no food, especially non-nutritious food. So no clear water, no enough clothes, and sometimes you had to sleep under rainy, like the roof was slicky and wet. You slept on the floor, on the ground, so yeah.
Very difficult conditions.
It was.
Do you ever have moments now in your life here in Rochester where you think about the difference? I mean, the comfort that we have here that maybe Americans take for granted compared to what you grew
sometimes
up in?
I think yes, especially young children, because when I first came here, I was 18 years old, about 19, but I arrived here in 2010, October. And after a month and a half, my case manager from refugee resettlement case manager from Catholic Family Center took me to Rochester City School District, registered me, and I was lucky. Just say I was blessed. I had a chance to go back to high school here again in America, so I had a chance to learn English. And I was look back. The kids here, they are free. They really have opportunity. But when I was from, you were starving for food. You were starving for a lot of stuff. And I was just so excited to learn.
And so you had a chance at the age of around 19.
I came here
to go back to school.
By myself, yes. I actually finished my high school already in refugee camp. I graduated there when I was 70 years old. And I left refugee camp. There was two refugee camps in between Burma and Thailand. So they are called Karani refugee camp. So camp one and camp two. So I came from camp two. And for some reason, I had to apply to come here to the United States. So they moved us from camp two to camp one. So I had to stay in that camp one for 7 months, I think. I had to go through the whole process, like a medical check, criminal background check. You had to pass the interview, all those stuff. And then, yeah.
And you ended up coming to the United States on your own?
Yes, I wanted to.
You wanted to?
I wanted to, of course. I had no, all I knew, all I wanted to do after I Well, actually, I applied to come here when I was 7 years old. I wanted my whole family came together, but for some reason, my parents, they did not want to because they were worried that if this, my father said, well, if you do not speak English, how can you go to America? You don't speak the language. How are you going to survive? Just stay here, even though might be theirs. And I said, no, Dad, please go together. And my dad said, no. And then I had to cancel. I canceled twice. The person. But then when I turned 18, I said, okay, now I'm 18. They say, if you are 18, you can make your own decision. I'm going to make my own decision. Then I made a decision. I applied and went through the whole process by myself.
And what was the most difficult part for you when you're 19 years old, you arrive in Rochester, October of 2010? What was the hardest part for you, Carr?
Language.
And reminder, just get right close to your microphone. There you go.
Language was my huge, let's say, my huge obstacle. I went to school and did not understand English. I came back home and did not understand. I had a hard time communicating with my landlord. And transportation is my second problem. I had to go to grocery store. I had to go to the doctor's appointment, and I did not know how to use public bus. I did not know where to catch bus. So I remember I walked to one of the Asia stores in Rochester here, from my home to their store on my foot, barefoot. It took me 1 hour. So, yeah, all around that.
And when did you, was there a moment in your time in Rochester where you felt like you had overcome not just the language, but also understanding public transportation?
Yeah,
where
it took me a few months.
A few months.
And then I learned where to catch the bus, and I read the street name. Yeah. And I graduated from high school here 1.5 year. Then, yeah.
It took you 1.5 years?
Yes.
And you graduated high school.
I was old enough.
Mm-hmm.
I was old enough, so.
What did you think of the American education system? How was school for you?
Awesome. Compared from refugee camp. I mean, I used to go to school in a refugee camp, but
I love it. You said awesome. That's great.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Freedom.
And so now, what is life like for you now?
I'm doing okay. I'm happy. I can smile.
How has Rochester been? How do you describe Rochester to whether it's family or friends who might ask, is it a welcome community? How is it for refugees here?
I remember, so I left refugee camp on October, maybe 24th, 25th, sometime. And I arrived here in October 26th, between 27th. I got to the Rochester airport and I had no idea where I would go. Then I met a case manager from CFC, and she had an interpreter with her, and they greeted me at the airport, and she took me to the apartment. She showed me just like Paris, a new tower, and the bed was made already. Nice bed, purple color was my favorite, and nice rooms, and a bathroom, all of the clean, a kitchen, foods, and she opened the fridge, all foods enough in the orange juice, milk, of course. I never see milk in the fridge. I mean, I do, but it's like here more like and I was like, wow. So I have all foods here and chickens and fruits and my bed is ready and bathroom and paper, towels and soap, everything. And I was like, wow. And it was so welcome, especially the landlord, American landlord. He was like my father, because I came here as a young girl and 19 years old. And he, even though I did not speak English, but he tried to teach me, like, make sure you don't go. And he kind of protected me just like my father. I hope that I'm just hope that he sees me and he heard me from this radio. I can never forget what they provide me, and they took good care of me till I graduated from high school. He was just like my father.
That's awesome.
And he is American. I'm just so happy.
I love Carr's story. And Carr, by the way, your parents joined you in Rochester about 3 years ago?
They came Yeah, after I graduated from high school here, I called them. I said, Daddy, I'm graduated from high school, and you were worried. You cried when I left. Now I'm graduated, and you did not. You were not by my side, but I have a cap here. This is American school. My God. And he was like, that's over phone. And he was like, what? Because he was so worried when I left. Then like a year, maybe a few years later, I said, Daddy, it's okay. I'm here. So then, yeah, they joined me a few years later.
How are they doing?
They're okay. They're happy. We are all happy here.
Turns out you were right, by the way. Do you ever tell your dad that? Dad, if you're listening, Carr was right. Before we lose the hour, I want to ask our guest just briefly, and we stressed earlier that the event that the Jewish Federation of Greater Rochester has put together is not political. I hope anybody who's listening to these stories, it doesn't think there is a tinge of politics here. These are human stories, and the Jewish Federation of Greater Rochester is an apolitical organization. This year, however, there have been moments where questions about refugees have become political. There have been different iterations of a so-called travel ban. The president's advisors and the people who helped construct it themselves, including Rudy Giuliani, called it at one point a Muslim ban. They changed it to a travel ban. I want to ask our guests what they think. Carr, when you see that, what are your thoughts about those proposed travel bans for people from different countries?
Well, as you heard about my story, we came through the whole process, medical check, background criminal check, so security check, everything. So
are you saying that you think you were very effectively checked out before you were allowed
yes,
to come here?
Yes, you checked. They check you. So you were checked. So, and there's, you passed. So there is a why you are here.
There's no confusion passed. About who you are,
right?
Or your parents, for example,
right?
Or your
because,
husband, yeah.
Right? You had to go through the whole process. So,
Parwez, what do you think? I mean, is that something that you have paid attention to? Do you have thoughts about that? The travel bans.
The travel bans are like, as I see, when a president is new. When a president is new to the administration, he takes some decision, some urgent decisions, you know. So by the time, I hope, I'm not questioning someone. Mm-hmm. I hope by the time it gets better. That's what I have to say. But I hope by the time it gets better.
So you think perhaps this is just a new president?
A new administration,
acting
urgently. Yeah.
But maybe that will change over time.
Maybe.
There's a view of it. Abdullahi, what do you think about the so-called travel bans?
And thanks for asking that, you know. It's a part of the political. So, and we believe God makes the most decisions. And I think it's... And, my team already, you know, explained to, you know, to the, you know, and the reasons. And they all, everybody is, you know, also did the process, like checked migration, you know, for a while. You know, it's like not 1 week, not 2 weeks, not 3 weeks, for, you know, for a while. So the migration is standing for the country. They want to make sure who they're letting in home, you know. Is somebody, you know, and can be a part of the community. So I think everything is the migration, you know, the system. So I think, and when you hear or read it, you know, and somebody is already saw what happened to their family, to his family, to her family, you know, this is something, you know, and, you know, you have seen, you know, maybe people, you know, they watched from the news, they read from the newspaper, or they heard from the story, but they think we have seen and we met with this, you know, and problem. So, and there's still some, you know, kids, mothers, you know, families in that, you know, and problem. So the safety, you know, American, the number one I like it is they're thinking about the safety, the job, the street, you know, and everything, planning event, the safety, security, you know, everything, the safety. So why we don't save this family, these kids, and, you know, and Now, as my team said, when they came to the, you know, register, they had a good house, room, everything. So that person who will come to you, you will give them back for your time. They wait in your time. They didn't give you to, you know, just enjoy and jump on the bed, you know. So they want you, your time. You know, they will get retired, these people, you know. So you have to, you know, give them like help hands. You have to give them, you know, and give them back, you know, what they, you know, give it to you.
I'm so glad to hear that the refugees on this panel have had these experiences where they felt welcome. They had these wonderful families. And in our last 30 seconds, I want Karen Elam, the Community Relations Director of the Jewish Federation of Greater Rochester, to remind you what's coming up on Sunday, December 3rd. Go ahead, Karen.
Thanks, Evan. So, again, it is our Supporting Our Refugee Neighbors event that's happening December 3rd, 1 to 4 p.m. at Temple Brith Kodesh, and we're looking for people to make donations and to come learn more from the refugee agencies. If I have two more seconds, yeah. I would just love to say that the Jewish people are refugee people, and so historically, and so we feel very committed to refugees. It's a very, that's really the reason that we are organizing this event, and it's a value of ours that we really would like to share with the broader community.
It's beautiful.
Thank you.
Thank you. And it, by the way, Karen mentioned earlier, and we'll do it again for you, if you want to jump online to see what the needs are for this event on Sunday the 3rd from 1 to 4 at Temple Brith Kodesh, what's the website to check that out?
JewishRochester.org.
JewishRochester.org. Check out events. It's Supporting Our Refugee Neighbors. Karen, thank you.
Thank
Happy
you.
Thanksgiving. Really
thank
appreciate
you,
the work you're doing. And to Kar Parwez Abdullahi, thank you for being here. Thank you for
thank
sharing
you
your
for
thank
having
you for having me.
Me.
Yeah. And thank you all.
Thank you.
And to the newest, Parwez, enjoy Thanksgiving tomorrow with your family.
Thank you very much.
Wonderful. Happy Thanksgiving, everyone. Happy Thanksgiving to John Andrus, our engineer. Audrey Sample is the intern. Megan Mack, producer. I'm Evan Dawson. We are back with you Monday, and I hope you have a peaceful and warm and happy next few days. Thanks so much.